Monster Man, special episode, Aliens.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
Today's episode is a special episode brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon supporters, and in particular, of Patreon supporter William. If you'd like to be like William and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, in addition to getting to choose a topic for a special episode, you'll also get all new episodes of my other show, Patron Deities, as well as the rewards for the $1 level, which I got some monthly bonus content coming out, hopefully this week, maybe early next. So William, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's show. So William has asked me to talk about aliens, designing aliens. And he referenced some RPGs in his message, particularly the sci-fi horror role-playing game Mothership, which I have both played and run. And we're going to approach it kind of from that perspective, but I am going to talk about designing aliens in sort of science fiction role-playing more generally. One habit that I have on this show is to call certain types of monsters aliens. And this is kind of a shorthand that makes sense in my mind, but maybe not super useful for most of my listeners. It's not a term that has anything to do with whether the creatures are in the game described as being from outer space, or even if that game has a concept of outer space. Instead, it's to do with the way in which the players are going to be interacting with these creatures. I don't want to make this an episode that's just about what makes these types of monsters distinct, but I do think that we're going to kind of want to recap it a little bit. So what do I mean when I say that a monster is an alien? When I talk about an alien, I'm talking about a monster that is, I mean, maybe not even a monster, a creature defined by its difference from humanity and which connects to the aesthetics of rational inquiry. I don't mean that it has to make sense in a scientific way, because we can often encounter alien-type creatures whose biology or whose culture is extremely oversimplified. You have to apply some kind of rational inquiry to it. It's more the process of how you think about it rather than the actual, like, game-world facts of the creature that makes something a science fiction monster as opposed to, like, a horror monster. So it doesn't have to make sense scientifically or sociologically or whatever, but it does have to make sense that the characters would think about it in those terms. So if you think about trying to predict a dragon's next move based on what you know about its ecology, that can make for a fun game, but it does feel undragonish. It feels a little bit as though you are subverting the mythic resonance of the dragon as a monster. Whereas if you met an old hermit and he told you that the dragon has one secret weakness, you know, which is that its heart is buried in a lost grave on a remote island or something, well, that feels a little bit more dragonish. Although, asterisk, in fact, a lot of medieval dragon tales are about people using kind of cunning engineering solutions to deal with dragons, but never mind that. Similarly, if you're trying to like establish a negotiating position with the dragon based on what you know about draconic culture, again, that feels contemporary. It feels more, I mean, scientific's not the right word, but it feels like you're approaching it from the standpoint of rational inquiry as opposed to a standpoint of, like, mythic dread. Those things have always been elements of fantasy role-playing games because there's always been that kind of strategic element in the way that players approach scenarios, right? Like, the problem solving is that kind of like logical way of thinking, which means that there's always a possibility that these types of attitudes, you know, enter into how we think about a fantastic monster, but that's not mainly what those creatures are about. On the other hand, the idea that you could get, you know, the xenomorph off of the Nostromo by praying to Pelor, or that Klingons can't hurt you if your heart is true, those don't quite work. So to go back to my example, like, the creature from Alien and its sequels, the Xenomorph, is an example of a natural sciences alien, whereas a Klingon from Star Trek is an example of a social sciences alien, asterisk, more so in later versions of the show, right? So from Next Generation onward, we become concerned about the culture of Klingons more so than we were in the 60s. So what do I mean by that? The Xenomorph's life cycle may not make any kind of biological sense. Maybe it does. I'm not a biologist. I'm not a scientist at all. But it represents a logical, empirical universe. A universe in which things happen according to the cold laws of chance and nature. This is more like representative of something like an environmental disaster, right? Which are often understood in that way. The characters committed no great wrong. They were just minding their own business when a force beyond their control put them into a deadly situation, and they had to deal with it as best they could. Now, obviously, thematically, this changes as we go into later films, but it's true in Aliens as well, where the kind of like the military setting of Aliens and the worker setting of Alien have little in common, but they do share a kind of like pragmatism. The Xenomorph represents a logical, empirical universe, right? It's just nature that's killing you. The creature is a cold, hard fact. Similarly, in order to understand Klingons, either as an ally or as an enemy, you have to invest in learning about the norms and the mores of a different society, especially as they evolve. One of the things, and I promise I'm not going to talk about Star Trek too much, one of the things that I really like about the Worf stories on Star Trek The Next Generation, and this continues into Deep Space Nine as well. I haven't watched that much of the later series. But one thing that I really like about those stories, it becomes clear that society has certain ideals and that those ideals are important to them, but that does not mean that they obey those ideals. So Klingon culture has these ideals of being brave, honorable warriors. This is part of their societal ethos. But when we get to look at the Klingon government, it's a pack of scheming politicians who have to present themselves as brave warriors rather than, you know, empathic friends of the people, and whose actions therefore represent that like public perception. You will get more out of dealing with Klingons in a game if you take some time to understand their culture and think about how it might influence their behavior, but not assume that it is a series of rules that they invariably follow, because they are rational beings capable of making choices. So to translate this into game terms, if we're thinking of designing an alien monster, the thing that makes it distinctively alien in my view is not what it is, but what we want the experience of encountering it to be. So what is the problem that the monster poses, and not necessarily what is the solution to that problem, but what do you want the experience of finding the solution to be like? Perhaps that's a distinction without a difference, but I think in this case, you know, I'm not trying to say every monster is a puzzle monster that necessarily has its own solution. So consider the game that William mentioned, which is Mothership. Now, Mothership is a sci-fi horror game, and so a lot of the time, the emotion that you want to be evoking when you introduce an alien creature is fear. Mothership is also a kind of everyman science fiction game, a la Alien, so the PCs are regular folks who succeed, if they succeed, by quick thinking, creativity, and determination, rather than by, like, exceptional power or skill. And typically, Mothership will tend to have frantic action sequences, but other than that, a rather measured pace of storytelling. We can expect Mothership PCs to typically be somewhat cautious and analytical in their approach, right? So, starting with that premise, we want to think about the type of horror that we're looking for. I've long been a fan of the role-playing game Unknown Armies. And in Unknown Armies, they talk about the five sources of, well, the term they use is madness. I'm not so sure that I think that this is a, like, sound discussion of mental health, but I think that the so-called madness meters in Unknown Armies are a very useful way of thinking about sources of horror. Yeah, not that it's an exhaustive list, but they're five really good ideas. And they posit the sources of horror as violence, helplessness, isolation, the self, and the unnatural, right? So that last one being like when you realize that reality is not what you thought it was like. As in those stories where someone is horrified by the mere presence of a ghost, the fact of the existence of a ghost. So we pick a basic terror, and then we think about how we want to present that terror. If this is science fiction, we need to dress it up with a scientific bit. So let's say we've decided that the horror we want is a kind of, you know, body horror, which is horror of the self or maybe horror of violence. So the horror of your own body turning against you, of not being in control of yourself. So in a fantasy game, we might have like a cursed ring that gives your hand an evil will of its own. or a demon that possesses someone's hand. And those could definitely have kind of like ritually problem-solving kind of approaches. I'm not saying there's no overlap. But for our purposes, we want to do something a little bit more sciencey, right? This is a science fiction game, so that ring stuff is not how we get down. So instead, we'll say that this is a parasitic organism that attaches itself to your nervous system and essentially like becomes a little brain that can control part of your body. So it intercepts the signals that your brain is sending to the nerves and the muscles in your arm or whatever, and replaces them with its own. It's like a cuckoo in the nest of your body. I got like a B in both the high school biology classes I took. Science was not an area where I excelled. But note how I like used the language of science and medicine to present this thing. And also when I used an analogy kind of from the natural world. We're grounding this in thinking about like science and thinking about physical facts, but note that we don't have to be scientists in order to do this. I'm certainly not. This gives us the kinds of horror that we're hoping for in a science fiction horror game like Mothership. There might be visceral solutions. So say one of our crewmates has lost control of their arm and they've murdered one of our other crewmates with a welding torch. Well, it might be the case that we need to like hold them down and bloodily saw their arm off because it's that or they're going to kill us. Or shackle it to some kind of railing so that later when the other crew members who've had more of their bodies taken over by these parasitic organisms come in to infect us, like, we've put our crewmate in a terrible position, handcuffed to a railing. But then we also have kind of, like, intellectual solutions. So we can have scenes where the ship's doctor is, like, patiently working in sick bay, trying to extract this thing from someone, or even to devise some sort of protection. Or technological solutions, where, you know, we're all putting on our spacesuits so that these parasitic organisms can't get to us, and then hoping that, as our body-controlled, but not mind-controlled, fellow crewmates run at us, desperately pleading with us for help, but swinging various tools and knives from the cafeteria and whatnot, they don't manage to cut open our suits. These feel maybe not futuristic. I would say that Mothership in general is not a game where the science fiction feels futuristic. It's very rooted in the contemporary. You know, this isn't some like real weird stuff. Typically, it's grounded in a kind of like, you know, this space station is a bit like a truck stop kind of reality. Similarly, Mothership doesn't typically do the first contact sort of scenario, right? As a rule, this is, this is more of a The Expanse kind of science fiction universe rather than a Star Trek one. But there is an archaeology skill, and a number of the like published scenarios are to do with figuring out the cultural rules of an alien society. So you might be exploring an alien structure, trying to find your way out of it, trying to figure out how it works, and there it might be important to try and understand the symbolism and the culture of the alien society in order to figure out what the different parts of the structure do, etc., etc. And again, it's okay if this occurs in a very simplified way. The key to running mystery horror, investigative horror, as opposed to a mystery game, is that you're trying to create the sense that there is a coherent system at play here that you are not fully understanding. Whereas in a more strictly mystery game, typically you would be attempting to understand that system. So it's okay in a game like Mothership if your sense of the alien culture always remains fragmentary and tantalizing. It's okay if you never fully solve it, but you do manage to figure out like how to open the lock on the tomb door or something. This can be a little tricky. I always think of Pyramids of Mars, you know, where there are very simple logic puzzles protecting the tomb of this ancient and super advanced alien, because it's a show for kids. So one tradition in this kind of science fiction is to make those alien societies a satire of some aspect of human society, or perhaps more charitably, we could think of them as thought experiments. What if there was a society that had X as its organizing principle, rather than the blend of commerce and religion and nationalism and individualism and whatever that different human societies are? You know, what if instead we had a society where everything was structured around the organizing principle of a warrior culture, you Klingons, or a commercial culture, you Ferengi, or whatever? And I think that if you think a lot about science fiction, you tend to make fun of this. Those cultures have become a byword for sort of quite simplistic world building. They obviously present societies that are much less complex and nuanced than societies in the real world. But while people like to sort of pick holes in this, I think there's actually a lot to be said for it. It can go too far. I've mentioned the Game of Thrones thing before, right? Where the Song of Ice and Fire books are full of, like, here we are in Fishtown, where the ruler sits upon the seaweed throne and everybody has tridents, and oh, this is the Scaly Hollow neighborhood, and this is the Bulging Eye neighborhood. Like, we get it. They like fish. Even then, like, for all that I make fun of this, it has a valid world-building purpose, which is we've got a large number of different regions in this setting, and we need to make sure that people can distinguish and remember them, and that means amping up their gimmick to make them more memorable. The same thing applies to the game application here, right? Real societies are not organized around some kind of single concept or single principle. That's just absolutely not how societies work. But also, real societies can't be explored in a single 3 to 4 hour game session, or even 10 3 to 4 hour game sessions, right? Real societies are complex and difficult, and people spend their lifetime studying them. A 45-minute Star Trek episode necessitates a pretty simple social organization. The downside is that, from an anthropological standpoint, like, this society is full of idiots. This planet has a problem that 5 total strangers can solve in 45 minutes. But it is the way it is for a good reason. So, okay, let's pick an aspect of human society. You can kind of see how this works in, like, Predator, speaking of science fiction horror, where you can sort of piece together the rules of the Predator's behavior when you figure out what it is. So let's pick something similar. Let's say we're going to have an alien society or a single alien whose behavior is focused on dueling. Like, the history of dueling is very interesting. You know, if you look at kind of early modern European society, right up into the late 18th, early 19th century, dueling was a core part of how men related to one another for a couple of centuries. Dueling was, theoretically at least, a very important part of society. And people did fight duels, and people were killed in duels. But a lot fewer people get killed in duels than you would expect, given the extremely rigid codes of honor and offense that gentlemen are supposed to observe, and that they are supposed to, like, respond to breaches of with the challenge to a duel. So society comes up with ways to get around these restrictions, whether those are largely symbolic duels in which neither party is in any real danger, or the most meaningless possible apologies that technically satisfy the requirements for not having to duel someone. Now, this is all fine. Any society that has something like this tends to create a system of workarounds and accommodations. We understand what dueling is, and therefore, even when we're insulting other gentlemen, we do so in an extremely polite way so that they can't just challenge us to a duel. And so even though we have this rule, our society rubs along fine. I mean, people periodically getting killed in duels, but it's not really a huge problem until some outsiders come in, because these meatheads from the Federation don't understand our extremely complex code of insult and accommodation, and they wind up getting challenged to a duel right away. Or, you know, maybe you have a relentless alien duelist now chasing you, who you have provoked in some way that you don't understand, who is increasingly offended by your attempts to flee, and even by your attempts to, like, fight tactically against it. Whereas if you, like, stood your ground and took it on mano a mano, it would not necessarily try to kill you. So all of us, no matter how much we try to look at things from others' perspectives, occasionally get that feeling that either we have lost our minds or that everyone else in the world has lost their minds. And I think that should be what this kind of alien society feels like. When you are participating in its culture, when you are failing to participate in its culture, you should be baffled. But whereas in a fantasy society, sometimes you're just being given, like, images that are baffling, and you're not really expected to do anything with them, the rules of that society should be inferable. In the same way that perhaps the, you know, if it's that kind of game, the scientific kind of weakness of the creature that you're fighting, the, you know, unique method of dispatch, which may be some kind of thing you can do to the ship or reverse the polarity of the neutron flow or suck it out the airlock or whatever, that again can be something that you can infer, even if that doesn't, like, necessarily make a whole lot of sense scientifically. The difference is really primarily one of aesthetics. So those are my thoughts about aliens and why I sometimes describe humanoid species that have been looked at by the game in a primarily ecological or sociological fashion as aliens rather than monsters, because that's how I feel when I think about them, and how you can have the horror that you need in a science fiction horror game without necessarily including any aspect of the supernatural, which is such a feature of horror in general. Indeed, how you can make that horror uniquely SF horror rather than just horror in space, if that makes sense. So William, thank you once again for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Everyone else, if you'd like to be like William and get your own special episode, don't forget that all you have to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. But for everyone, regardless of whether you pledge or not, our next episode is going to focus on two new monsters that appeared in Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. And those are the Were-Bat and the Were-Raven. So I hope that you will join me as we discuss them next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.